Okay, you guys, here we go. She Runs Ultras, episode number 101. How many of you guys are completely baffled as to what, when, how much food to eat during your runs and your races? I'm guessing quite a few of you, because this is one of the major topics when it comes to ultra running. It's something that confused me for a long time, and so I've been sort of chomping at the bit to get Julie on here to talk about ultra running nutrition. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk to my friend Julie Shoeb, and she's going to share some valuable tips and tricks for how to start wrapping your brain around a solid nutrition strategy for your upcoming ultra. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Julie Shoeb. Cool. Well, do you want to just start by telling us who you are, what you do, how you got into this?
Sure. Yes. So my name is Julie Shoeb. I've been a registered dietitian nutritionist for, coming on 13 years now, getting close to that. I worked in the clinical, like, diabetes education world actually for over a decade. And then decided, I kind of got burnt out and decided that I wanted to do my own private practice. And, it took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do, but the inspiration came from actually going to an ultra marathon, kind of like, it's a weekend festival. It's in Big Sky, Montana. It's called The Rut. And mind you, my husband and I have been ultra runners for 8+ years. I actually just got like one of those Facebook memories that popped up, and my husband 8 years ago around this time finished his first 100 miler in Idaho. So yeah, that was really fun. And so we've been runners, long distance runners, for a long time, but that was 8 years ago was when we kind of got launched into this like ultra world. But anyway, so we were at the Rut, and we had 11 friends running this. And the Rut is like a really intense, like, it's pretty technical terrain. It's a really, really fun race if people are interested in looking at it. There's some exposure, so it's fun, and a lot of climbing. So 6 out of the 11 friends that were running had difficulties with their fueling, and 4 out of those 6 didn't finish because they got so sick that they had difficulties with their fueling and they couldn't finish. And then 2 of those 6 people finished, but they're like fast runners, but they were like slowed down significantly because of their fueling. And so it got me thinking, and I was like, you know, I want to talk to them more about what happened. So I gathered up those 6 friends and had conversations with each one of them and really like dived deep, like, what were you feeling with? Like, what were you doing? And they really didn't have an idea or clue of like what they were doing with their fueling. And to me, in my dietitian brain, I was like, and having run ultras myself, understanding the importance of fueling with enough food and fueling with carbohydrates and getting a variety. And so, but it made me realize really quickly that people don't have this knowledge. And we have these people that, like, you know, ultra runners are really cool people that want to go out and push themselves. And so it kind of opened my eyes to like, oh, this is a niche that we need, like, is needed. And I could really get into this. So that is how, that was over a little over a year ago now. I've been running my private practice for a little over a year and been helping ultra runners learn how to fuel their ultra marathons. And it's been really fun, and it's been a good journey. So that's kind of my story of how I got into this role of helping people fuel.
That's funny, because I think, like, it's almost one of the very first questions that I get from people when they either come into the Run Your First 50K program, or when they have run an ultra and like want to talk about the race. Like, they want to talk about, you know, how hard the race was, or, you know, their training or whatever. But then it always, a lot of it, 90% of the time, it shifts towards nutrition. It's like, okay, what did you do? You know, like, how did you overcome this? And how did you overcome that? And it's like, it's one of those variables that sometimes feels like you can control it, but then oftentimes it goes off the rails so fast, and you're just like, I don't know how to get it back on the rails. So I think people are going to really enjoy this conversation, because I know you have a lot of really good, I I hate saying tricks because they're not really tricks, but, you know, tips and tricks for people to sort of rein in and figure out a nutrition plan, because a lot of people wing it. And a lot of people like wing their training. Like, my big beef is like people wing it when it comes to their training. They sort of just like throw darts at the dartboard. Like, here, this sounds like a good idea, or this sounds like a good idea. And I'm like, okay, let's rein it in a little bit. Like, there are such things as training plans, and we can like really put some parameters around this and get some data and send you in the right direction. But nutrition for a lot of people sort of feels like that same thing. Like, here's a dartboard. We're going to throw darts at it. We're going to see what's going on. And like, maybe this will work. Maybe this won't work. So the first question I have for you is sort of like, what are, and I know you talk about this a lot on your Instagram page, and we'll definitely link that up in the show notes, but just real quick, tell people where they can find you on Instagram.
Oh yeah. So my handle is at ultra.runner.nutrition. I might be changing that to ultra.running.nutrition soon. So either one of those two variations, they're both pretty close.
What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see runners making when it comes to fueling? And this could be either for long runs or like during races. Cause I'm a big proponent of like, you race how you practice. So I guess this could be really like long runs and races as well.
100%. I love how you brought up, Megan, like winging it, throwing a dart at a dartboard, like trial and error fueling is like so, so common, right? People think like, oh, you just have to figure out what works for you, which is 100% true, but there can be structure to it. And they're like, yes, you get to pick the foods that fit right for you. And I can give you ideas on that variety of what those foods could be. But there is definitely some balancing of like carbs and protein when it comes to ultras, and there's balancing of sodium and fluid. So yes, there is a structure if a person is willing to like learn about it and really get into that. They don't have to do so much trial and error, and they don't have to wing it, and they don't just have to like cross their fingers and hope for the best when it comes to fueling, because there can be more of a structure. Yeah, I love that you brought that up. So the biggest mistake, 100% hands down, is not eating enough. It's under fueling. So people wait too long to start fueling, which can cause GI problems in and of itself, because blood flow is shunted to our working muscles when we're running. And so your stomach actually kind of falls asleep when we're running, especially for, and this is all in like context of like races that take longer than 6 hours, right? So that's like our six, that's our ultra, this is the nutrition I'm talking about. So yeah, people oftentimes think, oh, I ate breakfast, like I shouldn't have to eat for the first hour or two of my race because I'm well fueled going into this run. 100% good job in eating breakfast. Bravo to you, because some people don't even do that.
And that's amazing to me that you would go into a race or a long run without at least having a little something in your stomach for that effort. But right. I digress. That's a whole other.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but some people, you know, like they feel really good this first hour or two, and you don't feel like you need to eat anything. And then when you do eat something, your stomach is like, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. I thought I was taking a nap. Like I thought I didn't need to work. And so then when you do put something in your stomach, then it is going to be a little upset and angry at you. So just let it, like waiting in and of itself is a big mistake and can cause GI problems, nausea, lack of appetite, all of those things that we hear people struggle with on ultra running. And then the other part is just like it's research based, but there's enough research out there to show that an average of 60 grams of carb, and that there's a range to this. It goes down to 40 grams up to 90 grams of carb for people. I like 60 just because it's right in the middle and most people do really good with that. So 60 grams of carbohydrate, when you think about it, is a lot of carbs. And so it's really hard.
And you're talking per hour.
Yes. Per hour. Yes. And some people can get away with a little less than that. My husband, he's like the subject of all of my Instagram right now because I just had a baby. So I talk about him all the time, but he can average upwards of 80 to 90 grams of carb an hour, and it benefits him. He feels good. He doesn't run into these GI issues like he used to when he wasn't fueling with that much. So hands down, it's under fueling, and then waiting to eat on long runs. And then, and races. And then with, like, to your point for training, like you're going to run, right? So a lot of times people think on their 1 hour workout, whether it's an easy short day and it's only going to take you an hour, or whether it's a hill repeat that's high intensity that still is going to take you maybe an hour, hour and a half, not fueling those, you're losing an opportunity to learn, one, what kind of fueling sources work well for you in higher intensity situations. And two, you're losing an opportunity to train your stomach to tolerate that food while you're running. So those would probably be my three biggest mistakes: waiting to eat, not eating enough, and then not fueling your training runs.
So what would you say is the threshold? Because in terms of like the time that you want to start eating, so half an hour in, 45 minutes, like when, what's the threshold there?
This is different for everyone. On most of my Instagram stories, I'm going to recommend to start eating in the first like 30 to 45 minutes, definitely within the first hour. If you go for a long run with me, I start eating in the first 10 minutes. I pop like an energy chew and eat it right away just because I know I feel better when I do that. So, so it's dependent on the person, right? But for sure, you want to start eating no later than an hour into a long run. And you're probably not going to have enough time to eat enough if you wait to eat like 45 minutes to 50 minutes in, right? So that's why I usually recommend that 30 to 45 minutes. If it's earlier than that, bravo. There's nothing wrong with that, right? You're not breaking any rules by eating early on in a long run.
It's interesting that you use that phrase, because like breaking the rules, I think people think that there are some sort of rule about like, no, I have to wait till 90 minutes, or I have to, like, there's some set amount of time, because I think some of this comes from just this information overwhelm. There's so much out there. There's so many different recommendations. And, you know, by all means, like, if you don't like what we're saying here, go test other things as well. My sense is that you're going to come back and like be like, oh, actually, Julie was right. Like, you know, test this theory out too. I'm curious to hear. This has always been my theory, and it's based on nothing else than my personal experience. But what I try and do is early, often, and in small doses. That's sort of my theory on eating. And so I'm the same as you. I'll go out for a run and I carry food with me all the time. And I will start eating usually within the first 15 minutes, you know, and people are like, but we're just going like around the block. I'm like, doesn't matter. To your point, I often, over the years, I've decided that this is another opportunity for me to test out foods and for me to test my stomach. And, you know, early on when I was just doing 50Ks and stuff, my food repertoire, like my arsenal, was a little smaller. I didn't really need to be testing a lot of things, but my personal experience has been, as you start to stack on miles and stuff, you need to make that bank of things you can pull from that pool much bigger, because I'll tell you what, after Tahoe, I no longer want a PB&J sandwich. I don't want any more cup of noodles. I don't want any more hash browns or mashed potatoes, like, for a very long time. And so I love Go Macro bars. If I never eat another one for the next 6 months, I'll be totally fine. Like, you know, all those things. And so having more opportunities, more places to pull food from is much better, because, you know, you talk about this a lot, but like your palate will get tired. You'll just get like, at some points I was just like, I have to eat another, you know, cup of noodles, like, and you have to start like really forcing it down. So anyway, I got off on a little bit of a tangent there, but yeah. So just like starting early, practicing, eating your foods, and then building and going from there. It sounds like a good plan.
Yeah. So did you just do the Tahoe 200? Is that what you did?
I did, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, it was epic. It was a pretty epic adventure for sure. And that's like, you probably would not condone my fueling strategy.
How so? Tell me more. What do you mean?
Well, I obviously did early, often, and in small doses. So I started eating right away, like going up Homewood within the first 10 miles. I had a bar, I had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I had, you know, whatever I had in my pack, 10 miles in was the first aid station, swiped a bunch of bananas and more PB&Js. I mean, my pack was mostly food, you know, like all the mandatory gear, but all of my pockets, you know, up front here, I'm sort of mimicking this because you guys can't see me, but like all my pockets were just stuffed to the gills with food, chews and bars and real food and all that jazz. And I'm somebody who has in the past had a lot of GI issues. And so I have found personally that it is because I waited too long, or the interval between my eating spurts was too long. And so this is how I naturally came to early, often in small doses, because previously my strategy was, well, and I saw a lot of people doing this, and, you know, I guess if it works for you, you know, don't listen to me, like listen to Julie. But I saw a lot of people, you know, sitting down and having almost what I would classify as like a meal. They were consuming a lot of food. And for me, that just makes my belly super sloshy. I can't handle that. And it just, it actually exacerbates the situation. So, you know, really for Tahoe, the name of the game was, how much food can Megan eat?
It's an eating contest.
It is an eat. I 100% agree with you. It is an eating contest. It's funny because I actually just recorded a podcast episode last night with my pacer, Frank, and we were talking about pacing and sort of like crewing people. And one of the components of pacing is, you know, sort of monitoring your runner, like, are they eating? And I really threw, I think it was more of a curveball to Frank, but at one point I had texted my husband, or he had texted me as I was coming into the next aid station. He was like, can I get you anything? And I was like, I would really love a Subway sub. Like, I would really love a sandwich, because I was so behind on calories and I couldn't get psyched for any of the food that I knew was coming up at the aid station. And so he brought me like a sub. I'm a plant-based runner and have been plant-based for almost 15 years now. And so he brought me like a 6-inch veggie sub, like packed to the gills, and a bag of chips. And I'd been doing a lot of ginger ale to help with my stomach. And so I just, you know, at the aid station sat down and just housed this sub. And Frank just looked at me and he was like, that, I never would have guessed that. I'm like, I'm so behind on calories. And it was like the energy that I got from that sub was like rocket. Might as well have been rocket fuel, because I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the 200 milers are basically an exercise in feeding yourself, clothing yourself, and then like catnapping and just like trying to keep yourself upright and moving. I mean, it's just like, it's not really about like running 200 miles, at least not for someone who's like mid back of the pack. It's like, how can you take care of your body so that you can keep going? So
totally. Yeah. 200s are a whole, I mean, I feel like they should just be classified in something completely different. Like ultra marathon nutrition, like, yeah, is usually like 50K to 100 miles. And I've had some clients do 200s like you, and it's a different strategy too. Like, for that long. Mm-hmm. You brought up, you know, it is something to be said that expecting a level of like lack of appetite is appropriate. Like, you are pushing your body to a physical level, right? That's why we do it, is we want to see like how much we can push ourselves. And so expecting that maybe you're not going to be feeling your best the whole time is reasonable. So I always like to put that caveat out there, but there are things that you can do to limit lack of appetite. There are things that you can do to limit vomiting and throwing up. But expecting that there might be a little level of like, oh, I have to work through this lack of appetite, is appropriate.
And I tell people that too, because one of the things that I learned sort of trial by fire was that I would get to a point where I wasn't hungry. And, you know, this is sort of like, again, all this trial and error that I did. So then I would wait, and then I would try and eat when I was hungry. And then, like I said before, that gap was too big. And now my stomach, I always just say like my stomach turned or flipped, like it just revolted on me. And then I would get bloat. I never got to the point of needing to vomit ever on Tahoe. Like, that wasn't a thing. But at any other race distance, the only time I did was because I made some really bad choices on a 100 miler that was just like, this is actually where I learned a lot of those lessons, like not enough, not often enough, just total volume. Like, I treated it as if it were a 50K or a 50 miler when in fact it was a 100 miler. And so that was my cardinal mistake. That I think is where a lot of people sort of get tripped up because they're like, well, I'm not hungry, so I shouldn't eat. And my thing is always like, that's everyday nutrition type of thinking, like how you would go through your day to day. There's a complete other set of parameters or like quote unquote rules, but not really rules, right? Like rules that we're trying to follow when it comes to ultra running, because if we followed the everyday rules, we would really be in sort of a bad way when it came to the long run race context.
Oh, 100%. I am like a huge believer in intuitive eating when it comes to day to day nutrition. Being in tune with your body, being okay with eating foods that give you satisfaction, whether they're considered healthy or not. Like, and then of course, nourishing your body with the foods that feel really good, right? And listening to those hunger cues. And then also planning out your hunger too, like looking at your schedule. That's intuitive too. But like, yeah, ultra running is not intuitive nutrition. There aren't like, this is something that you kind of have to work against what your natural tendencies are going to tell you to do.
So how would you recommend, so say there's people that are listening, which I know there are, like that are thinking about doing their first ultra, they're sort of coming from maybe like the road running marathon type of world, which is that fueling strategy is very different than what you would probably see in your ultra, you know, 50K, 50 mile type distance. How would you suggest people start going about putting together a plan for their fueling strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do agree with your fueling, how do you word it? Fuel frequently in small amounts.
Oh, early, often, and in small doses.
Yes, I like, yes, that is definitely the approach that I encourage people to take as well. And then, of course, you come across some people that would much rather just eat like every 30 minutes. And usually I'm the one that's pushing them to do it every 30 minutes because most of that time people are doing it every like 45 to 60. So new people who are going from the road running world into their first 50K or maybe 50 miler, the first thing I would say is get used to, there are most definitely 50Ks out there that you can do very similar fueling strategies or a road marathon. Most of the time, 50Ks are on trail, so your pace is going to be slower, so you're going to be out there for longer, and then most are going to have significantly more elevation gain or loss, right, than road marathons. And so that adds an element of wanting to get more of a variety of food. And so, yeah, you for sure can do it on gels and chews if that's what you prefer. However, I think your stomach is probably going to tolerate it a little bit better if you're able to incorporate something with protein. And you'll see this a lot on my Instagram, and it is research-based. But consuming about 5 to 10 grams of protein on average every hour. So that might look like incorporating, maybe you get a protein bar that has 20 grams of protein, like some of those pro bars have 20 grams of protein in it. So maybe that looks like eating a pro bar over the course of 4 hours, and that, or maybe over 2 hours, and then that gives you enough protein for like that 4 hour period, if that kind of makes sense. So incorporating a little bit more solid foods and looking for more protein-based foods. Of course, that does not mean that you get to forget about carbohydrates. You have to have carbohydrates. I always forget to say this because a lot, and because it's just the method that I go by is counting carbs and not counting calories. And a lot of people will just look at calories on a food label and see, oh, this has, you know, I'm going for 300 calories an hour. We don't want to do that because we get the best source of energy for you while you're running, especially an ultra marathon, is carbohydrates. And so there are a few things to keep an eye on, right? You don't want to have a carb with a lot of fiber in it. That will probably cause some GI issues. And then, so if you're looking at a label and just looking at calories, you might miss that food is pretty high in fat and pretty relatively low in carbohydrate. And fat can also cause GI upset when we're running. And so that is why I always recommend looking at when you're looking at a food label, you look at the serving size, and then you look at the total carbohydrates. The sugars are included in the total carbohydrates. Oftentimes people get hung up on that. So just total carbohydrates is what we're going for. And carbs are anything with sugar and starch in it. So that is one thing that I would encourage people to switch to, not counting calories, but counting carbohydrates, and then also balancing those carbs with some protein in it, in there. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
It does. And it just actually sparked another one. So I, through my, you know, GI distress trial and error, and just sort of trying to figure out different strategies to get more carbs in, as well as sort of handle electrolytes, which is kind of a different conversation, but part and parcel.
Another part to this answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, started to use a product like Tailwind that has carbs and electrolytes in it. So, and there's tons of stuff out there from various different people who've got, who have positions on, no, your carbs should come through solid foods, versus people that are like, yep, nope, Tailwind or another product similar where you're getting sort of liquid carbs is okay. I'm curious as to your thoughts on, you know, liquid carbs versus solid carbs. We'll sort of deem them those two terms.
Yeah. I'd be curious as to what the reason why people would say only solid or only liquid. I'd be curious as to what, where that's coming from. Because I see benefits to both. In an ultra marathon, sometimes people get hungry. Like my husband, and it's happened to me too, where it's like, I actually feel really hungry and drinking something right now isn't going to satisfy that hunger, like you and your Subway sandwich.
Yes.
So I think there's a huge benefit to having both going at the same time. Mm. And this is what also a recommendation that I oftentimes encourage people to do is a liquid source of nutrition. And maybe for a 50K, you can get away with just Tailwind, like the basic, what's it called?
Yep.
Is Tailwind Endurance Hydration, or I don't know. I get them all mixed up. There's Scratch, there's Spring Energy, there's Tailwind, Gnarly. There's a whole bunch of them, right? So there's the electrolyte beverages, which are usually carbohydrate-based plus our electrolytes. And sodium is the biggest one when you're running ultras that you want to pay attention to, which we haven't gotten into, which we will, I'm sure. And for a 50K, that's probably fine. So you could have like a base of Tailwind going. And so I know, like, I believe one scoop of Tailwind is 20 or 25 grams of carbohydrate.
Yeah, I think you can make it as, you can make it strong or weak, you know, but I do remember it's 100 calories and something roughly like 20 to 30 grams of carbs.
Yeah. So if you did one bottle of Tailwind, 20 ounces, and 20 ounces is in general right around where we're going for hydration needs. And of course, that's different for everyone. But most of the time that 20 ounces an hour is right around, it's a little bit on the higher side. So you're doing that as a base, but still that's only 20 or 25 grams of carbohydrate. And we still have 40 left over that we need to get, right? So that might look like half of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So you get some protein in there, or that might look like a Lara bar that has 5 grams of protein. And then I believe 20 some grams of carb, but that still doesn't even get us to our 60 grams. So we might want to throw in a gel. So it's looking at how to level all of those things out. If we're going, maybe you're doing a really hard 50K or you're planning on being out there for 8+ hours or 10 hours or however long, then you might want to actually look in to switching that electrolyte beverage to a recovery beverage. And this throws so many people off because we have these like, right, we kind of have these blinders on sometimes when we look at nutrition and we think, oh, but that's only for after I'm done racing. Newsflash, there's no rules telling you that you can't drink that while you're running. and it's actually really awesome because most, recovery beverages have carb. They have protein. So that protein is going to help you actually eat more because it's going to help you settle your stomach. And then it's also going to help actively repair your muscles. So you're going to feel better while you're running. And then you're also going to recover better. You're not going to be less sore the next day. And then it also has your electrolytes in there too. So like you're getting a little bit more for the bang for your buck when you switch to some kind of beverage that has carb, protein, and electrolytes, and it's getting you your fluids. So I've yet to come across a single product that meets all of your needs for just 1 hour. You know, I've gotten that question. Oh, is there just like one food out there that I could just have the whole entire time?
Newsflash, you would definitely get sick of it. Like, you know, if you, that's the only thing I, and I can attest to that, like you would definitely get sick of it.
Yes. Like, yeah. When people ask that, I'm like, so you'd want to do that for like 24 hours while you're running your 100? I don't think so. There's something called food habituation where we do get sick of foods after we eat them too much.
Yep.
So, and that would happen on your ultra for sure. So variety is key, but having something like that as a base is super helpful.
And I can attest to that, like having, because I've used the Tailwind recovery like during a couple hundred milers. My plan was to use it during Tahoe. It didn't end up using it. I can't remember why. I think maybe I didn't have the right bottle. Like I didn't have a vessel to mix it up in. But that probably would have been like, I probably really should have done that. But I can attest to that. Like I have definitely used it in a race context. And really, it has helped a lot because you are getting the extra protein, the extra carbs. It's like actually sort of filling your stomach without bulking your stomach up so that you can actually feel like you're not behind on calories, which is sort of like a theme of mine. Like trying to stay ahead.
I've heard of people, even if they want to incorporate a little caffeine, like people doing frappuccinos, that's probably not going to have protein in it unless you get like some fancy one with protein powder or something. But, you know, there, yes, you can get creative with what you're consuming.
So how would you recommend people test these out? Because like we're throwing a lot of suggestions out there and people are going to be like, I know some people will do probably what you're going to, I'm guessing what you're going to recommend, but then there's going to be some people that will wait and try to deploy this on race day. So how would you recommend people start to phase in these new suggestions, these new foods and products?
Great question. So it brings us back to training runs, right? So when people start to work with me, I always ask them to get a base of what they're fueling with now. So, and I want that to be on average of like, maybe a shorter long run, right? So maybe like a 2-hour to 3-hour run, you're going on, which everyone, like if you talk to a non-ultra runner, they always laugh at your face, like a shorter long run, like what, 2 to 3 hours?
Yeah.
But yeah, we all get it, right? We're like us ultra runners, we understand that. So get a generalized base of how much carb. We start with carb because that's the most important one, and fluid. So get a base of how much carbohydrate, not calories per hour, but carbohydrate per hour you're getting, and get a base of how much fluid you're consuming on average per hour. If you can get a general idea of what you're doing right now, then we know how to build from there. And so I will tell you, most people are averaging probably about 20-ish to 30-ish grams of carb an hour. If there are, that's like in my experience working with clients and talking to people, that's the general amount of how much we're consuming when we go out on training runs, which our bodies can for sure do it. It's probably not the best for our bodies. We're probably not recovering as well as we would. We're probably not having as much energy on those runs with that much carb, but you know, we can do it, which is why we keep doing it.
Yeah, we're sort of like skating by, right? Like you finish that run. I think this is sort of a common theme too. I'll ask people after, you know, their long runs, like, well, how did it go? And they're like, yeah, it was okay. And so I'm asking like, you know, what are you drinking? How are you eating? Like, they're like, well, I had a little of this. And like, you know, there's, again, it's sort of like this winging it idea. Like, oh, I had a little of this, a little of that. I don't know. I'm not sure how much. I'm like, okay, well, next time, like, let's get some parameters around it. And then let's try and increase it a little bit, because sort of going back to your other point, people don't think about this, but you actually have to train your stomach too. Like you have to train your stomach to accept these things, because it's one thing to eat them at home on your couch. It is another thing to try and eat these things while you're on the move. And then once you've been on the move for 3, 4, 5, 6, however many hours.
100%. Absolutely. Yes. So find your base. And then you're going to still, and some people can increase that base faster than others, right? Some of us have stomachs of steel and we can tolerate whatever. And then there's other people that really have sensitive stomachs. So that might look like adding 5 to 10 grams of carbohydrate on average per hour for your next 3 to 4 long runs, and then getting used to how that feels. And then the next 3 to 4 long runs that you go on, increase another 5 to 10 grams and on average per hour. So it does take a little bit of upfront work, but that's why you would, you know, hire somebody like myself or Megan to help you do this, to help figure out how to add on. And then you're going to start adding in that protein content, that protein part as well. Once you get into like that 40 gram per hour range, to get more of those solid foods in there too, or more real foods, however you want to, which is a pet peeve of mine to call real foods versus like energy foods. I'm like, it's all real food really. But
yeah, I think for me, you know, my personal experience with quote unquote real food, like peanut butter and jelly, bananas, that sort of stuff, versus the packaged stuff or processed stuff like chews or bars or, you know, has really been, I do well on a mix of those things versus just the packaged stuff, because I felt like, well, especially so I'm of the era when I started running marathons, the strategy du jour was all gels all day long. This is something I never want to see again. I never want to see another goo gel ever again, because I probably had enough to last me a whole lifetime. So I'm sort of averse to those things because of that. And so I opt for more quote unquote of the real foods because I just don't love that stuff. But what I experienced was just a real high and low in terms of blood sugar. So like I'd get the high once I sort of took the hit of the goo, and then not long after there'd be this massive crash. And so that my struggle back then was, well, how do I manage that? And then when someone introduced me to this idea of like, oh, you could actually eat real food on a run, right? It was like, oh, that's sort of a game changer, because it's a little bit, the digestion process with the, again, quote unquote, real food is takes a little bit longer because your body has to break it down. So,
and you're chewing.
And you're chewing, right? Instead of just like, ugh, trying to take a, oh God, I can just like the sensory, it's all coming back to me, this whole sensory thing with the gels.
Yeah, a lot of people, yeah, I don't love gels either, but there are people out there that love them and that is 100% okay. And there are people out there that don't like them and that is 100% okay.
Yeah, that just sort of goes back to your previous point about like sort of we have this plethora of options available. And I love how you sort of just give some pretty hard numbers and like ranges of numbers of very specific things to sort of go find. And then you, the runner, have to sort of go do your due diligence and find the things that you like, you enjoy eating. We're not trying to say you have to have this very specific product that you just can't even like stand to look at. But you get to sort of, you know, go shopping, so to speak, for the things that you're going to take with you on your long run. And you should, I mean, my whole goal is to kind of be excited about the food that I get to eat versus dreading the food, because then you're just going to not be inclined to eat. It's so funny. I have this one client, I'm not going to name names, but he is notorious for failing to eat and drink. And no matter what tactics we try, he just can't get into the habit of eating and drinking consistently. He's one of these people that will wait 90 minutes, you know, couple hours. And then by that time, he's already in the hole. And it's such a deep hole to try and dig yourself out of. What suggestions would you give him? Because I'm hoping maybe he'll listen to this and he'll take your suggestion, because he hasn't taken any of mine yet.
He's not alone. This story is very, you know, it's common, right? There are people out there that do this. And I've done it myself a long time ago, right? Like I used to not fuel like 10 mile runs. So the first thing would be to start off really small, and probably there's also probably some forethought that needs to go into that race or that run, right? Too, like sometimes people, like we got to figure out where the breakdown is happening. So what's happening to where he's leaving the house without any food to go on the run, right? I used to run with a running partner. This was years ago. She's quite a bit younger than I am. And we would be out there, we trained for a 50 miler together, and we'd be out there And we would be in, like, I don't know, we'd be in miles into this run. And I would realize that she had her little pack on, but maybe she brought like just a little tiny thing of water and like no food. And it's like, okay, where is your nutrition? Where's your fuel? And it's because there wasn't a thought process about packing the bag and getting the food ready when you're out the door. So that would be one thing, right? What can we do pre-run to get you to bring the food on the run? But if you're bringing the food on the run and not eating it, that's another problem too, right? Because I have clients that do that. It's like, I pack my backpack full of snacks, load it all up, and then come home and then unload all the same snacks.
Yes. It's like the apple that makes the round trip from to and from work with you every day, and yes, you just never eat the apple.
Right.
You
know? And then you're like, banana or oh, this apple's gross, so I'm going to like compost it. Yeah.
Pitch it. Yeah.
So setting a timer. So once you get that food, once you get that prep, right? And start small. Like don't, like in anything in life, you don't want to overwhelm yourself, right? So maybe you're going for a 10-mile run, but you're only going to bring one pack of gummies. Is that enough? Technically, no, but it's better than what you've been doing. So let's work on eating that one pack of gummies on that 10-mile run. And then actively setting a timer, like on your phone, if you bring your phone, if you bring your watch, like set a timer and get an accountability partner, like whether that's somebody running or somebody that's going to ask you when you get back from your run, hey, did you eat your snacks? So yes, so that would be where I would say to start, is start with something really easy. I love your point of like getting a food, bringing a food that you're looking forward to eating. And yeah, so then, and then getting some kind of structure in place while you're running to remind you to eat and start small. Like there's no need to go all wild.
My thing is, and what I hear most often from people is like, okay, I have to have this strategy. And when we say, when we use the word strategy, it typically means we're going to build out this elaborate multi-level, multi-step plan. And I am like you, I'm like, no, we are not doing that. We are doing smallest viable thing. Like, you know, when I would sort of like back in the day when I was more personal training and just trying to get people to, you know, comply with their like mini workout, it's like, I want you to do one bicep curl, one push-up, one, like literally. And they would look at me and then I was like, I want you to do one of everything. And then I want you to leave the gym. And they'd be like, but that's not even worth my time. And then I'm like, it is, because this is how we build the habit. So like, I love that you're talking about, yeah, there is, and that there is this whole forethought that has to go in it. And I think part of where people go wrong, again, when it sort of comes to ultra training, and then a component of ultra training, which is your fluids and your nutrition, is like, there's some pre-planning that has to happen. You have to really think through being prepared and being, set up for success on this run, despite, you know, all the other things that you have going on in your life. So really thinking through, and like, you know, what I do was like, I go back to how I was raised to like get ready for school the night before. I pack my, you know, stuff all my pockets full of the food. I set out all my clothes, like I fill the bladder, like put it in the fridge, get all the things ready so that all I have to do in the morning is just put everything on and go, so that I've already thought it through and really tried to remove those barriers, as you said, for me to forgetting these things and not having the stuff that I need in order to, because otherwise, here's my other big beef about this, is like, you've sort of wasted an opportunity to be practicing and testing and refining and like finding the stuff that works for you. And so if you consistently miss those opportunities, you're going to show up on race day and be like, well, I guess I'm just going to wing it. And this is how we end up like in the winging it phase. So I'm so happy that you mentioned the breaking down of those barriers.
Yeah. And a lot of times people say it's so hard to replicate race day, right? Because we don't, on our, if you're running 50K, you're not going to do a 50K in your training. To their point. Yeah, that's very, very true. But there are things that we can do to help you be prepared, your body be prepared for that feeling when you do get past that 26.2 mark and you are running like the furthest you've ever ran.
so a lot of the people that we're talking to now are sort of getting started on doing just their first 50K. But then there are some people that are listening to this that are maybe have gone to 50 miles or 100 miles. Like, how would you sort of differentiate, or would you, the strategy that you would use for like a 50K versus, let's go to the other extreme, 100 miler? Like, what would be the difference between those two?
Yeah, good question. Can I go back to a part of that question I didn't answer that I want to, for somebody that's jumping from road to 50K? So we talked about the importance of figuring out carbs and fluid, right? And then once you kind of figure out your baseline there, then we start with the carbs, we start to think about adding protein in. With the fluid, you also got to get your baseline with fluid, and then we start looking more at sodium. And the reason for sodium in particular is there's something called hyponatremia, and it ultra runners are at greater risk for this hyponatremia. That's where your body gets low on sodium content. And it's a weird concept, especially if you're in like the medical field, to think of like, you want me to like consume, like you want me to seek out salt. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's because your body is actually sweating that salt out, and you're going to function a lot better if you are actively replacing that salt. It doesn't work. You can't like preload your salt. You actually have to like, I've had that question. I've had people do that, and I'm like, no, we got to do this. We got to, it goes together. So that's the other layer that when you're new to ultra running, you think about staying hydrated and where you're at. And then we start adding in, making sure we get that salt. And what I recommend, and mind you, these recommendations are general, right? Like, I just want to put that out there. They're general recommendations that typically work for most people. But of course, hydration needs are really wonky. And then of course, there's environmental things that change that, rather heat, elevation, all of it, right? Humidity. So on average, we're looking to get at least 14 ounces of fluid, plus at least 250 milligrams of sodium. So those are like your bare bones numbers. And if you're doing way more than that and you feel good, that's totally fine.
Per hour.
Yep. Yes. Yep. So it's 60, right around that 60 gram of carb per hour and 5 to 10 grams of protein per hour mark, 14 ounces at least, and then 250 milligrams at least of sodium an hour.
So another question that I got, which, I think is an interesting one, is if you're using a bladder, right? Like a bladder in the back of your pack, and you're trying to gauge, do you have like a trick for people who are trying to gauge how much they're drinking per hour so that they can stay, but when not being able to see it, right? Because you're not using a handheld, you know, do you have a trick for that? Have any recommendations?
Oh, I get this question. Do you get this question a lot? I get this question a lot.
Yeah, I do. So I'm going to pass it on to you.
I wish that there was like some magical thing that I could be like, oh yeah, like get this device and it'll tell you how much you drink. Oh geez. No, I don't think there's anything out there that exists. If somebody knows about some kind
yes,
of gadget,
please tell us.
I feel like this is such a cop-out answer, and it's because I can't think of a better answer, is just practice. Like yeah. If you know you're going to be racing with a bladder, then you have to do training with a bladder, and then you have to like do the due diligence of on a training run while you're stopping for a snack or you have to go to the bathroom or something.
Yeah, have a look.
Yeah, look. Otherwise, you know, the front flasks, if you live in a place like me, I live in a place with grizzly bears and moose and mountain lion. So I carry bear spray also. Yep. For humans too.
Yep.
Right.
Safety.
Unfortunately. So that I lose that ability of having two soft flasks. So I just have one up front with me. So I do tend to run with bladders, but yeah, I think I feel like it's such a cop-out answer, but that's my answer, is just to practice. Or in general, know like I want to get through, in 2 hours, I want to get through 1 liter. So if you're carrying a 1 liter, like have that time and then check, see how close you are. So yeah.
That's the response that I would give. That's always been my response too. Again, like know how much you're taking, know how long you're going to go for, sort of do the mental math, knowing how much you want to be drinking per hour. And sometimes, you know, I this may run counter to sort of like what your thoughts are. But I guess for me, again, operating on early, often, and in small doses, like I'm constantly sipping, but there may come a point where I, you know, I'm maxed out, like, because then I'm just peeing all the time. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, because at that point I feel like it's one in, one out type of scenario. So would you say that, like, if that's the point that you get to, that you could sort of back off on the fluids for a little bit or keep going, like just keep drinking?
This is a really tricky subject. I'm really glad you bring this up, because actually frequency of peeing can be an indicator of hyponatremia. So it's your body's ability, like your body is giving you feedback of like, oh, I'm too high on just plain water. I don't have enough sodium. So it's actually trying to dehydrate you to level out that sodium content. So peeing while you're running isn't necessarily a great way to assess your hydration, which is like so annoying because that's like what we do on a regular basis, like day to day. So if you are peeing frequently, I would say, hey, how much sodium are you getting per hour? Let's look at that. Because if it's on the low side, that could actually help alleviate that frequency of peeing that you might be experiencing. On the other side, maybe you're just not sweating that much, and maybe you don't need that much hydration. And so it's fine to drink less. Like that can be the option too, which sounds like it might be for you.
Yeah. I'm not a huge sweater. And I think that's sort of been my quote unquote issue with doing like a sweat test, you know, sort of like the traditional sweat test to see how much fluid you should be replacing. Cause I'm just like I tried it and I just, it's negligible. Like I just don't register. So for me, I have just sort of been like, oof. Yeah, I'm a light sweater, but then, I think to sort of prove your point about conditions, if I were running around here in New Hampshire, especially on a day like today where it's warm and humid. So it's, I mean, warm is relative, like it's 65, but like very humid and rainy here. I mean, I wouldn't go through that much water. At Tahoe, during the first 10 miles, I went through almost 2 liters of water in the first 10 miles and like didn't have to pee. I mean, I went at the aid station because I forced myself to go because I knew we were going to go through like a residential area. So like, you know, whatever. Logistics, right?
Love. Yes. So these are the things us ultra runners think about. Oh, we're going to be in, like,
in public.
A neighborhood where I can't just like pull off and pee.
Yeah. But like that, I was constantly sipping and made a pretty strong mix of Tailwind in my 2 liter bladder. And then I had an additional 1 liter split between two soft flasks up front, which were always sort of my like reserve fluids. And I started to go through one of them, but I had like a little bit left in my bladder, but I wasn't really heavily sweating, but the altitude was sort of kicking my butt. And I just really needed to keep those fluids going versus risking basically like drying myself out being at altitude, which I'm not used to. So that's just a whole other factor to take into account.
Yeah. Being at altitude or elevation, your needs for everything just go up. So you need more fluid, you need more salt, and you need more energy, you need more carbs. So yeah, totally. That was wise of you.
I want to go back to something that you said earlier about upset stomach. I think recently I saw you post something on Instagram about strategies for upset stomach. Do you have suggestions for people? And I guess my question is really, if there's sort of like, I think about it in two ways, like one is my stomach is starting to go sideways. And then one is we are full on, like we have bloat, we don't want to eat. Like it's like DEFCON 1, like things are just not, it's not good. So like, is the recommendation the same for both, or do you have different strategies for how to handle those?
Yeah, no, I think you, this resonates with lots of people because I've had clients say this exact same question. So to my point, the whole point of you practicing on fueling is going to limit this happening on race day, right? So the whole goal is to like at least reduce how often or how much you're experiencing an upset stomach or nausea or vomiting or GI distress, bloating, however you want to describe it. So practicing on your training runs is going to help this. I can't stress this enough. But if you start to feel going sideways, right? Like if you're like, oh, I feel like this is not going well by eating more. So one thing I always encourage people to have in whatever one you prefer, either a peppermint candy or ginger chews, those tend to help settle people's stomachs. So like, and it's fine, like, especially if you've been fueling, if the issue is not that you're falling behind on fueling, but it might be because of like the intensity's ticked up or you're just like hitting that, like that point where you're like, oh man, I am working, and your body is giving you feedback, right? It's like, what are we doing? It's obviously going to be like, I don't feel that great right now. So then listen to your body and ease off a little bit. Maybe you have to decrease your intensity of your running. Maybe you get some ginger ale, like you had mentioned at Tahoe, at an aid station, or have that along the course somewhere for yourself, or a ginger two, a peppermint, do something to kind of settle and bring back that intensity. Don't force food at this point in time. Is what I encourage, because most of the time forcing food, if you're feeling nauseous, we all hear those stories of people like down on all fours, like puking up the Gatorade that their friend just like forced them to drink. So in situations like that, if you're feeling a little nudge, then like back off just a little bit. If we've hit the fan and like things are just not going well and we're puking on the side of the trail, then same thing. It's literally just don't force food, little tiny sips, maybe try and assess like, am I behind? Is that why this is happening? Because then you do like liquid nutrition is probably something that you'd want to steer towards, ginger ale or Sprite, you know, like think of all the things that our mom gave us when we were sick. Home, laying on the couch, watching TV, home from school. So those, and potatoes are oftentimes a little bit more settling. Potato chips, pretzels, something kind of dry and salty are the things that we'd want to go towards. But a lot of it is just like decreasing your intensity and maybe giving yourself a little bit of a break, right? Because running through that might be difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever recommend like Pepto or Imodium or Tums or any of that stuff to people?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not a route I tend to go towards, because I feel like that's just masking the problem.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I see why people take Imodium and take Pepto and take Tums. And Tums might, you know, if you're having like some heartburn, which does happen, right? Can definitely be a good option. That being said, this brings up a whole nother thing. Like if you take it NSAIDs, so ibuprofen, that can cause GI upset. So, and it's like such a common thing that people do in running. And it's like, oh, I don't think this is a good idea, especially for ultra running. You know, maybe you can get by taking a little bit on shorter runs, even though it's not recommended, but especially for ultra running, not a good idea. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because I think like some people, they just sort of abandon ship when their stomach goes sideways because they are just like, well, this is a sign, you know, like this is a sign that I should stop. And yes, it might be, but also if you just sort of like slow down a minute, like you were talking about, and maybe sat down or walked and then kind of, you know, assessed like, did the mental math, like when was the last time I ate? How much was it? Am I behind? Am I following a timer or a watch or something? And noticing if it's really because you haven't ate or because something else is happening. Maybe you ate something. So this is the thing that I'm always stressing to people, which is don't do anything new on race day.
Yeah.
And I would often include don't eat any new weird funky foods on race day. So like this issue with your stomach may be because you have violated this rule and you're starting to feel the effects of it. And so for some people, they're like, oh God, you know, like pickle juice or Like I can't do pickle juice. Like it's like the new thing. I can't do it, but it's too much salt, too much vinegar for me. But I know people that swear by it, and that's fine. But anything new like that is most likely, and especially if you're 3, 4, 5 hours into an ultra and then you introduce something new onto a stomach that is overworked, so to speak, right? Like, of course it's going to go poorly. So I'm always telling people, like, nothing new on race day. Just try, if you can help it, you know, unless it's you're already in a bad way and you're sort of like craving the thing that you haven't had before, then I would say, yeah, try it, because what do you have to lose, right? If you're already in a bad way.
100%. Yes.
So the other thing I was curious about, and this is actually a question that I got from another one of my clients, was this whole, and we sort of touched on it earlier, the whole idea of like sugar. And, you know, for some people, again, sort of talking about everyday nutrition and then ultra nutrition, sugar is a big thing, especially, again, as you mentioned, your previous history in the world of diabetes. So can you sort of give us your take on, you know, there's a lot of there when we flip over the package and we look at a lot of these products, there's a lot of sugar in them. But, you know, you sort of alluded to the fact that the sugar is actually sort of wrapped up in the carbohydrates. So if someone has, like, say, a history of diabetes in their family, they don't personally have it, but they, you know, they obviously want to avoid having that happen. Are those products the ones that we're sort of talking about? Like, should they avoid those? Is that not a thing? Like, what? Give us the 411.
Yeah, this is a really tricky topic, because if you have somebody with diabetes running ultras, right, or pre-diabetes running ultras, there is a heightened concern around carbohydrate and sugar intake, rightfully so. We want to be keeping tabs on that, right, for our blood sugars, especially if we have diabetes or we're concerned about it. There is an increased need for carbohydrates, i.e. sugar or starch, when you are exerting your body like this, right? And so it's not like you're eating an energy chew and then sitting and not utilizing that energy, right? So like for somebody with diabetes, if you are out there moving your body, or out there, if somebody with prediabetes, if you're out there moving your body, this energy is still good energy for you to utilize while you're out there running. And yes, this would also be something where I would say, maybe because you're conscious about this sugar, maybe you do want to look at maybe a source of like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich instead, right? And maybe you try and see if you can tolerate a bread with a little bit more fiber in it. And then you've got some protein in there and you've also got your carbohydrate. So maybe you go in the direction of looking for these foods that are more paired with protein and carbohydrate. And with that, you're probably going to find some more foods with fiber. So you're also going to have to see if you can tolerate that, right? Because fiber is, it tends to cause GI issues for people, or make them want to poop when they're running.
Which is a whole other topic.
Yeah, it is. One that's really common and hard for people. So, but I don't, you know, sugar and the word sugar, it's such a buzzword. It's like, it's like people just get like, oh boy, people get heated about sugar, don't they?
And so, oh, for sure.
Yeah. But I always like to say, if it's better to give your body what it needs, especially if the need is there. And for us ultra runners, that quick, digestible, easily digested carbohydrate is sugar, right? Whether it's in the form of maple syrup or, oh man, my brain is going blank, but there are so many different words out there that are sugar.
Yeah. So I guess, so can we sort of just go back for a second? Yeah. So what you're saying with all of this is like, it's almost you're consuming it and then you're immediately putting it to use is why it's not so much. Okay. It's not so much of a concern.
Right. Yeah. If you're going out for even a 1 hour run and you are going to fuel with one pack of gummies, right, which is typically right around 40 grams of carbohydrate, or 40 grams of not even all of it's coming from sugar, but some of it here, I've got Clif shot blocks here. So total carb in 3 pieces of shot blocks is 24. Total sugars is 12. So an additional 12 of that carbohydrate's coming from a different source other than sugar or what's considered to be sugar. That's how you can read those kind of labels. So yes, there's sugar in there, but it is something that you're using and your body is actually going to function better because you have it in there versus not having it in there. But there's, of course, that approach too that I recommend. Like, you can also try and go with something paired more with protein when you're running. Peanut butter pretzels. So that could be an option, like those combos or whatever. Honey roasted nuts could be another option. Those have carbs, protein, and a little bit of fat. You just run into the issue of maybe learning to have to tolerate some of those ingredients that aren't digested as easily when we're running, like fat and fiber.
One of the things I found at Tahoe, which is again, sort of like it's a different sort of fueling strategy, but like one of the things I found that was really good were just like flat tortillas with avocado. I was just like craving, like food and a little bit more fat. And like, again, mostly because I was behind on calories, it didn't have any negative effects on my stomach, but I was like, oh, this is an interesting one. I had used it before. I had, lots of other long runs where I'd done like refried bean little mini burritos and, all that sort of stuff. But the avocado, I had seen it, a lot of other people were, requesting avocado. And I thought to myself, like, that's not like a thing for me. I didn't try it. So I've like violated my own rule. But at Tahoe, I was so behind on calories and I was so hungry. I got to that point and I was just like, okay, we're going to give this a try. And I was in a good place. And it was like life-changing, it was just like, I just needed those calories. And so yeah. So you do definitely want to, obviously, especially like you said, for fat and for fiber, like test those things. Cause again, those are different. They produce different results in your digestive tract that you want to, be prepared for.
Yes. And there are, and I'm blanking on the name of the product, but there are products out there that are technically classified as sugar. So it would show up on the label as an added sugar, it's a processed food, right? But it's a carbohydrate, it's a sugar that has been created to not spike your blood sugar as much and be digested over a longer period of time. I feel like it's called can I email it to
yes.
you?
Yes.
Yes. So there are ingredients out there that that more sports foods are actually utilizing, because that is in general, like, we tend to be more drawn to foods that are like, oh, this isn't gonna like spike my blood sugar or give me a high and a low, right? Like, it's gonna give me energy more level.
Is that what's in I was just Googling it. Is that what's in like the Yucan?
They have a proprietary blend. So I actually don't know what's in there. I've looked into that one. And I wonder.
Let's see. I for some reason.
Oh, here we go. I randomly took a screenshot of this and I found it on my phone. Isomaltulose. It's a slow release carbohydrate derived from sugar beet.
Oh, right. Yep. The sugar beet. Yep.
So there are foods like that in foods that are still offering 4 calories per gram, which is the same as a sugar carbohydrate would. So you're not losing carbohydrate there. And then it also, like, this isomaltulose apparently doesn't cause GI distress like maybe like it or like a alcohol sugar would. Or sugar alcohol, sorry, I mixed the two around. So like xylitol, right? Like, you're not getting as much calorie per gram with a sugar alcohol. And then you're also getting that, you're running the risk of GI distress with something like that, even though it doesn't affect your blood sugar like sugar would. So that would be something I wouldn't recommend doing. But this isomaltulose, products like that would be something that somebody with concerns for their blood sugar might want to seek out and learn more about products that have that in there. Yeah, UCAN has some kind of proprietary blend. They don't, I've looked at their food label. I can't figure out what's in it.
No, but when you said that, for some reason, it just spiked a memory of UCAN. But I just looked at the product label, and to your point, I can't figure out what's in there either, just based on what's on the back of the package label. But yeah.
But that wouldn't be a product too, like seeking out something like that. That's like, hey, our products don't spike your blood sugar, but give you a longer release. Yeah. That would be an alternative way to go about looking at things too.
And there are so many, like we could do a whole episode on just like all of the sports performance products, like the brands and the lines and stuff like that. So I hesitate to even say like make recommendations, because there's just so many. And I do think you sort of have to know what your objective is, like what you're trying for. Are you trying for electrolytes strictly? Are you trying for electrolytes and carbs? So, you know, a lot of these brands now have tester packs, like you can order so that you don't have to order a whole bag of something if you don't know if you like it yet. I know like Tailwind and Scratch and Hammer, like all those guys, they do, you know, little tester packs. So I would just suggest to people that they try a bunch of these things again, like on their short, long runs and see how they go. And then you can, to your point, start to build out that arsenal of food and products and stuff that you're going to be able to pull from during your race.
100%. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I think like the last question I have for you, and we've sort of like worked through the whole like process, is really just recovery, right? So you've done all the runs, you've done the long runs, and then, you know, maybe a race. Like, do you have some ideas or like suggestions for people as far as foods to eat, you know, maybe during training after a long run or after your race, to really sort of help your body recuperate and go again?
Yes. So we're looking once again for carb and protein combo. And then of course it's really similar to what we're looking for while we're running too, because we also need to replace our electrolytes too. So we're looking for fluid and also some sodium plus magnesium, calcium, the other potassium, the other electrolytes as well. So, you know, recovery beverages are a really good option. They're easy to consume after you're done. They're usually a beverage, and drinking something usually feels really good. Or making a smoothie that has some fruit, maybe some Greek yogurt in it, maybe some coconut water. I've personally been obsessed, if you've been watching my Instagram lately, I've been obsessed with this. It's a coconut water, frozen banana, frozen mango, like a handful of like frozen power greens, and then some just plain Greek yogurt. Mm. And it's so good. So something like that is giving you some carb, some protein, and some electrolytes. If I really wanted, you could add salt to it, right? Because there's no salt in coconut water. So like if you were doing something like that after a long run, that would be a really good choice. Or of course, just making like your good old fashioned, like almond milk, banana, chocolate, like protein powder smoothie, you know, like you can go. Yes, I love that one too.
Yeah.
So something like that. So getting some kind of, or like even I'm using lots of dairy, but dairy is actually a great post recovery because of the type of amino acid that's found in dairy protein is really good for muscle recovery. But not everyone has, you know, likes dairy, and that's totally fine. But like a yogurt of some sort that has carb and protein in it, plus some kind of fruit, or a piece of toast and peanut butter. Like it doesn't have to be anything super fancy. It could be like a protein bar of some kind, as long as there's some carb in it. Cause sometimes you get into these protein bars that are like only protein and fat, and there's like no carb. None of that for us ultra runners. We need our carb. So, something like that within, I always encourage like 30 minutes, you know, that's not all, like there's no hard and fast rules, right? Like I'm a dietitian that believes in no hard and fast rules when it comes to food, but in general, like that kind of range right after we're done. And then consuming some kind of larger meal within 2 hours. Of recovery of a long run. And then of course, if you've just got done doing like a 50 mile or 100 mile or really, you know, or 50K, then yes, you eat. you might see an uptick in your hunger for the next couple of days and eat. Carb and protein. Those are like fat always falls in there. I always say like you're going to get fat. Like you don't mm-hmm. have to worry about it. Just make sure that you're balancing with some carb and protein. You hear like a 3-to-1 ratio, a 4-to-1 ratio, really what, if that, like when it comes down to it, like, when we sit down to a meal, am I thinking like, oh, this is 40 grams of carb and 10 grams of protein.
Right.
No one is doing that. So like carb and protein, right? You want both. So, yeah.
So I have another question, and maybe this one is, we put a pin in it and we do a whole separate episode on this, but a lot of the questions that I have seen or have gotten recently around food and ultra running pertain to this general idea of how to train and fuel properly without gaining weight because of the increased energy expenditure, increase in hunger. And again, like if you feel like this is a longer form answer, then we can most certainly like put a pin in it. But I guess I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, this is such a tricky topic. First of all, I always like to dig a little bit deeper when somebody brings up their weight with me. I'm not a weight loss dietitian. It's not something that if you hire me, I'm not going to help you lose weight. Yeah. But I always, that's not what I do, right? Like it's, I help people fuel for their ultra marathons. So I always, but I understand that this is a concern and that this is things that people are talking about. And so we can still address it. So I always encourage people to tell me a little bit more about what is making them concerned about their weight, whether it's weight gain or they're concerned about gaining weight or whether their goal is weight loss. Tell me more about why this is important to you. I always try and focus more on the side of like focusing on what your body can do versus what it looks like. And I understand that this is like so many different layers to issues for people. And we have so many different social, messaging out there about weight and body image. It's a much bigger conversation, but that is what I tend to try and have people focus more on, is less about what we're looking like and more about what our body is able to do. Yeah. And I'm having to learn this lesson right now for myself. Mm-hmm. Like I just had a baby and I'm in a body mm-hmm. I don't really recognize, but I'm choosing to focus more on my, like I just did the vertical kilometer at the Rut 6 weeks postpartum and like felt it was hard, but I was able to do it. And like, so that is what I'm focusing on, that I had that strength and that ability.
Yeah. And that's like, and again, like I don't coach people on losing weight either. And so my approaches would be very similar to what you said, like, let's sort of have a look at this, but also understanding that, you know, you're going to need adequate fuel in order to do what it is that you want to do. And oftentimes, I think that I'm going to use the word problem, but I don't really mean that it's a problem, but just in this sort of context, like the problem sort of solves itself if you focus on the training and really hone in on the elements of your training, you know, getting strong, doing the strength and the mobility stuff, like, you know, getting adequate rest, making sure that you're getting high quality food in your everyday life. And then also, you know, trying to get high quality food for your fueling on your runs. And so again, I use the word problem, but just sort of to describe the whole context of the thing. Like if you're concerned about gaining weight through this process, you know, my opinion is that you might be putting the emphasis on the wrong thing. Like really the emphasis should be on, well, how do I do this smart and strategically, you know, so that I get the outcome that I want, which is to finish the race. And, you know, I think also agreed, there's so much mixed messaging and like about body weight, shape, and size, and whatever. And what I'm always telling people is like, I would really encourage you, if you have yet to go to an ultra race, go volunteer or just spectate, because what you're going to see is a wide spectrum of shapes and sizes and ages and everything. And it's one of those sports where, you know, you can come in as a young kid who's run cross country, or you could come in as an older person who maybe has been sedentary their whole life. I mean, we see examples of this all the time. People who have been really sedentary, and then all of a sudden they just decide that they want to quote unquote get healthy, and then they take up running, and then they do an ultra, and they just become the best possible version of themselves. And sometimes that involves losing weight, and sometimes it doesn't, but they just get stronger, they get healthier, they get more confident, and then they accomplish all these really kick-ass goals. And so really, you know, again, it's more about the emphasis, like where are you putting the emphasis? And again, you might achieve that goal, but it's because of your pursuit of a different goal that you might actually get there. So
totally. I love that. And one other thing too I wanted to bring up was, there's this assumption that losing weight is going to make you healthier or faster. And that is absolutely not true. or that gaining weight is going to make you slower. And that actually might be best for some people, mm-hmm. right? Like we mm-hmm. see, like we can't indicate for one person based off generally their what their health is based off of their weight, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many other factors out there. And also one other point I wanted to bring up was if the goal for somebody is weight maintenance and to avoid weight gain or to achieve weight loss, then we oftentimes, that person tends to, in my experience working with people as a dietitian, we tend to restrict because that's what we're told to do. And if honestly, that is going to make things 100% more worse, 10 times more worse than what, if you were just to listen to your body and give your body what it needs.
Yeah, totally.
Restriction and dieting is actually one of the biggest indicators of, or risk factors for weight gain. So, mm-hmm. It's really backwards for us when we decide to start restricting. That actually makes that issue even worse. Like you said, I don't like using the word problem, but restricting actually just aggravates the whole issue.
I think it's just it's something that sort of comes up a lot, but I think my opinion is that, again, you're here because you want to accomplish this goal, and really the emphasis should be on that thing, because that thing, like accomplishing that first 50K or running your farthest race, I'm a big proponent of process over everything. And like if you get really good at the process of what it is that you're trying to do, then you'll get to the thing. Because nobody knows how to, like, I didn't know how to run 200 miles before I started. And you just.
I don't either. I've never done that.
Right. Right. Like, so, and like, there's no rule book for that. I mean, there's really no specific set of rules for how to do any distance. I mean, you'll get coaching on it, but you know, the way I would coach you is completely different than the way I would coach, you know, some of my other clients. It's like, we have to really test and experiment and figure out the process that's going to work for us. I mean, that goes back to your point about how to get my one client to eat his food. Like, you know, the process that I give for him is different than maybe what somebody else would do. So you have to really fall in love with the process, which sounds horrible. And I never get buy-in when I tell people that, but the people who get the best results are the ones that fall in love with the process, show up every day for it, whether they want to or not, and just keep trying and trying and trying and trying and trying. And that's what ends up leading to their goal. So, you know, you'll get a whole other, I think my point in saying that was, if you focus on the process versus I just want to accomplish this one thing, not only will you get it, you'll get it faster, but then you will not only get that thing, but you'll get a whole host of other habits and skills and life lessons and results that you weren't even anticipating, just because you actually put your head down, focused on your own work, so to speak, and like just kept showing up and doing the thing. So that's sort of where where I would go with that as well.
I love that. And ultra runners are like all about the process, really. Like running 100 miles or 50 miles or 100K, whatever, 50K. It's a process.
Yeah, you got to settle in for it too. Like it's not, this isn't like 5K, 10K, half marathon where there's a quote unquote quick fix for things where you can sort of just push through for a finite amount of time. I mean, you can grin and bear it for, you know, almost even up to a full marathon, but then everything 50K and above, like we got to find solutions. We got to find processes for things. Like we have to figure shit out because there's
for half a day or longer, right?
Yeah.
Or a day or 2 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't just wing it.
No.
One other thing you asked about going, fueling between 50K and 100 miler. Can I answer that really quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, fueling for 50K versus 100 miler. So 100 milers definitely, involve more strategy, right? So for 100 miles or even 50 mile or 50 or 100K, you can even do this for 50K too, really. You can do this for anything, but you definitely want to do it for your 100 miler. Is to divvy up your fuel plan aid station to aid station. So you're looking at how long it's going to take you to run from one aid station to the next, and you're going to guesstimate on the high side on how long that's going to take you. And then you're going to base the amount of fueling that you're going to carry with you during that chunk of time based off of that. So that would be one of the biggest pieces of advice that I would give for those longer ultras, is really divide up your fueling from aid station in smaller bite-sized chunks, right? Figuratively and literally, because you're going to then be able to look at, oh, okay, in this next, 15 mile stretch that I don't have an aid station, put all of that food in a Ziploc bag ahead of time and be like, okay, I've got, three, awesome sauce, a half a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'm just rattling this off my top of my head. A bottle of Perpetuum and X, Y, and Z that I have to eat over the next 4 hours. Right. So it's a lot easier to look at it when you've divvied it up like that.
Yeah, for sure. Cause I think like going into 100 miler, you're like, holy shit. You know, like if you are trying to do like a sub 24 or a sub 30 or whatever, you're thinking, okay, what am I going to eat for 30 hours? And so that's just too big of a time frame for you to wrap your brain around. So I love this idea that you just follow your initial guidelines, right, on all those things and then break it up. I mean, Ziploc baggies are an ultra runner's best friend. I'm just going to put that out there. Like I can't even begin to tell you how many Ziploc bags I went through at Tahoe of all sizes, like all of my gear was in Ziploc bags, like everything, but having it right in front of you versus sort of piecemeal, right? Like, oh, it's stashed all over my pack. Like if you can start out by looking at it and saying, okay, all of this, okay, then you can really wrap your brain around, okay, when do I need to start eating in order to consume this over the next 2, 3, 4, however many hours.
Yeah. And hopefully you've practiced maybe eating those exact foods on a training run before.
In theory, that would be great.
Right? So yeah, so that would be a huge thing. I also encourage people to go calorie heavy on the really long runs, right? Because that nausea or that lack of appetite tends to happen more so later on in a race, which is another really good reason to practice eating on your short fueling, on your shorter training runs, so your body can tolerate more food early on in a 100. And I say calorie heavy, going against my whole carb per hour theory, but maybe you try and do 70 to 80 grams of carb per hour instead of the 60 or 50 grams that is more likely going to be happening later on in the race.
But saying calorie heavy sort of just helps people understand like volume, I think, of food too. Like it's not just that we're trying for those specific carb parameters, but like overall volume is going to increase, I'm assuming is what you mean.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. You're eating. The idea is to see if you can eat a little bit more to help eliminate problems later on, so they're less. Yeah.
Yeah. I know when I finished a couple of my 100 milers and definitely, well, by the time I was done with Tahoe as well, because I had sort of caught up, I wasn't hungry. Like I was they were like, you know, my crew, my patients was like, okay, what do you want to eat? And I'm like, nothing. No. I am full. I don't want to eat anything. Yeah. Like, I never want to see food for like, again, yep. that type of thing. I mean, eventually I did end up, you know, being hungry shortly thereafter, but like your initial feeling, at least for me, was like, yeah, not hungry, fully tapped out.
Yeah. Repulsed by the thought of food for sure. Yeah. which to that point, so maybe having more savory, salty, less sweet options later on in the race, planning for that. And then, so maybe you do more potatoes or a cup of noodles or like something like that later on rather than up front. And then liquid nutrition too. So like maybe you pack like those smoothie packs, like those Noka smoothie packs, or you have more recovery beverages planned to drink later on. Although I have recently had a client who said that she would rather drink early on than like her calories early on than later. And I was like, this is backwards from what most I hear from most people, but maybe there are people out there that would rather do it this way. And that's totally fine. And then the other thing would be to consider like, if you are okay with utilizing caffeine, if that's something that you're okay doing, then getting a caffeine strategy. And I do recommend either timing it before a big climb, because you are like an hour-ish, 30 to 60 minutes before you enter a big climb. And then because caffeine like gives you wings, right? It makes things feel easier. And then either planning it around climbs, or planning to utilize it in small doses frequently throughout the night to help you stay more awake and aware. I know when I've paced my husband in the middle of the night on his 100s, his last 100 was the first 100 he did not fall on. And he said he thought it was probably due to his caffeine strategy with it. And also just having a better nutrition fueling strategy to begin with in this one, opposed to some of the other ones that he's done in the past. But he oftentimes, I'm sure people tend to fall more in the middle of the night. And so caffeine can help you stay a little bit more awake and aware. So yes, utilizing that. And there's definitely more to that answer, but that's the short. Those are kind of the things that I would think more about for those longer ultras.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you start to think about longer than 6, 8, 10 hours for a 50K, right? We start to sort of have to extrapolate things and think about nighttime running and staying awake and caffeine and more volume of food, more variety of food, and keeping up with liquids, you know, fluids and electrolytes and all that jazz. So just in my mind, it doesn't necessarily get, like, I try not to think about it as getting more complicated. I just think about it as getting more, what's the word I want?
More strategy?
More strategy, maybe just like more, like we just sort of amp things up a little bit. We're sort of like building on, you know, we're building on 50K and we're sort of like extrapolating that out to make it, you know, to cover more time, cover more distance, you know, make
the need is bigger.
The need is bigger. Yeah.
The need is bigger. So therefore there has to be more involved.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So I don't want anyone to, I guess the point of me asking the question was that I didn't want anyone to be sort of nervous or scared about strategy for 100 miles. Just start to think about it as like, we're sort of doubling down on 50K, 50 miles, and we're just sort of, the need is getting bigger. So we just have to sort of expand the way that we think about of doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Any other thoughts or things that you want to add in here before we wrap up? I want to make sure if you're like beating a specific drum right now, I want to give you a platform to like.
No, I feel like your questions were so good, and I hope that the people listening to this podcast have gotten not only some like conceptual advice, but also some tangible advice, if you know, like things that they actually can go do and implement. And I always encourage people, connect with me. Instagram is the main place that I am. I just started a TikTok account. So if you're there, you can go join me on TikTok. I have hesitations about TikTok, but I got to do it. But yeah, I would love to start conversation. Right now I'm kind of on maternity leave, so I do have an online course that people can purchase to help put these pieces together, really know what to eat and when. You get help learning how to build a fueling plan. I have a fueling calculator to make just things like less confusing and less overwhelming, and ultimately you're going to race faster because of it. And then eventually I haven't set a start date yet, but I do a group coaching program as well. And it's super fun. Clients get so much from it. They shave time off of their ultras just because of working on that fueling strategy and improving it. So.
And is it for a specific distance, or do everybody every distance all at once?
Good question. Yeah. So it's most of the people in it are training for some distance of an ultra marathon. Or I have had people that their goal is to do an ultra marathon. So maybe they're running, 28Ks or marathon distances, but they are wanting to learn how to strategize their nutrition for ultimately an ultra. But yeah, most people that are in this group are training for a 50K or longer. But
nice.
But yeah, I always schedule a call with somebody just to see if we're a good fit for one another, if what they're looking for is what I'm able to offer. And then from there, we decide together whether or not the group coaching is a good fit.
And so how do people do that? You want them to go through your Instagram, or do you have a website you want to send them to?
Yeah, Instagram is best. Currently I have a wait list for the group coaching, but yeah, so just reach out to me on Instagram, or fuelingultras@gmail.com is my email, and I'm happy to accept emails there too.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Julie, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on here and share all of your ultra nutrition knowledge. Cause I think, you know, again, just sort of having some loose parameters to start with can really help rein it in, because there's just so much information and so many, you know, diverging viewpoints that it's hard to know, well, where do I even start? So I think this is a really good jumping off point for people. And yeah, if they want to try and experiment with more or less or different things, but just to be able to have a tangible starting point is huge for people. So I've got some things I know I'm going to work on based on our conversation. And I'm sure that everybody listening are feverishly taking notes. And I'll be curious to hear how you guys make out with some of the suggestions that Julie has given us. So I really appreciate your time. Thanks, Julie.
Yeah. Thank you, Megan. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Awesome. We should do it again.
Yes.
Okay, you guys. Well, hopefully you got some valuable information from that conversation. I know that I did. While we were recording, I was taking a ton of notes for things that I want to remember and try in the future. If you want to connect with Julie, I will put all of her links to her social media, her email, and her group coaching program down into the show notes below this episode. So wherever you are listening to me, whether this is on Amazon, Apple, Spotify, just click on the actual episode and scroll down. There will be a body of text underneath the individual episode that will have all of those links, including some links that I also put down there for my free resources, how to join my private Facebook group, and all sorts of other fun stuff. So if you haven't checked those out already, I would highly recommend it. And this episode is pretty timely because the previous episode was all about the off season. This is the kick that I'm on now, because this is where I'm spending all of my time dreaming and scheming and planning for the next season for myself, but also for a lot of my group coaching and private one-on-one clients. And on Monday's podcast episode, at the end, I'm going to share with you a way that we can work together to formulate your off-season plan. I just made a post today, right before I finished editing this episode, all about why the off-season is more important than the in-season. So go check that out over on Instagram or on Facebook. And I want to know whether you agree or disagree. I make a pretty compelling argument in the comments below. on that post. And I'm going to expand on that in Monday's podcast episode. So if you're sort of on the fence about how you're going to spend your off season, maybe you like to take the whole thing off. Maybe you train as hard as you can in the off season. Maybe you're confused. You have no idea what even an off season is, what it should be comprised of, what you should or shouldn't do. Again, go back and listen to the previous podcast episode. And also check out the next one on Monday, because my plan is to help you really wrap your brain around how to use this period of time that really confuses and maybe even overwhelms a lot of runners, because they don't want to go too hard, but they don't want to not do anything. They don't want to backslide, but they're just sort of like, am I on? Am I off? What am I doing here? So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that. If you haven't already, ladies, I would highly encourage you to come and join my private Facebook group, Run Your First 50K. I will put the link for that below in the show notes as well. Tons of information, excellent conversations happening over there. Right before I came on to edit this podcast, I just saw a post about what headlamp everybody wants to use, because the days are getting shorter here. More nighttime or early morning runs in the dark are happening. So that's just indicative of some of the stuff that you'll see happening over in that group. That's all for this episode, you guys. Enjoy this beat, and I will see you all soon.